You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Hello everyone, welcome along to the latest edition of the FWA podcast here from William Hill. Each and every week we get one of the top football writers in the land to preview the televised games that weekend. And of course this weekend it's the Premier League, and we've got five televised games over the course of Saturday, Sunday and Monday. Dave Kellner here in the studio, and I'm joined by the Sunday Times football correspondent Jonathan Northcroft to preview these matches. First of all, a warm welcome. Good morning to you, Jonathan.
Hi, Dave. Hello.
How are you doing, sir?
Very good, thanks. Yeah, all's good with me. You well?
I'm very well, thank you. I actually enjoyed the League Cup action over the course of the last two nights, which is unusual because sometimes it comes as a distraction for both punters and viewers and managers as well. But this week seemed a little bit different, and the Manchester Derby spiced things up on Wednesday night as well.
Certainly did. And then, of course, Chelsea-West Ham was a nice little fixture too. Liverpool-Spurs was a really interesting game. I think the competitions really have a new lease of life because everyone's now using younger, well, apart from Jose Mourinho, everyone's using younger players in the competition now. And it's becoming a place where you can watch, you know, tomorrow's talents properly. It used to just be Arsenal that did it, but I think most of the big clubs are doing it now, and you know, you're seeing some really good talents on show. And because it's early enough in the season, you're seeing, you know, guys really pushing to get into the first team. So there's a lot of competitiveness there.
Why do you think Jose Mourinho did play his first team, his full side against Manchester City?
Well, it was classic Mourinho. He's nothing if not a pragmatist, and he just couldn't lose that game. It's as simple as that. He couldn't afford to lose that game after the disaster at Stamford Bridge. And in a way, it was a gamble, because if he had gone in against a sort of half-strength Man City side and not won with Pogba and with Ibrahimovic and all of that on show, then, you know, there really would be a crisis. But I think he just thought, it doesn't matter about the future. It doesn't even matter about the performance. Let's win this game. And United were a lot better, actually. He got away with that. I think Michael Carrick playing was important. I don't understand why he hasn't played more. And actually now, Mourinho's managed to sort of turn heat on City and give himself some respite with that result.
Where's Henrik Mkhitaryan? That's the burning question at the moment, Jonathan.
Well, I think he's probably having a coffee with Bastian Schweinsteiger as we speak. It's becoming a mystery, and in a way, again, it's classic Mourinho because what he does when he doesn't fancy a player, or when he feels a player has let him down, or when he feels someone isn't quite mentally right, and we saw this happen to Kevin De Bruyne. He's brutal. He just doesn't put them anywhere near the pitch, and there's none of that sense of being allowed to prove yourself. I think there's quite a long road back for guys who go into Mourinho's bad books. I feel for Mkhitaryan, because woeful as his performance was in the 45 minutes against Manchester City, you know, it was his first real start of the season, and you know, you got to give the guy some leeway, and it came in the context of a really bad team performance anyway. So it does seem he's paying rather heavily for that, but also a few soundings about maybe, you know, his intensity not being right. I think Mourinho's used that word, so he obviously doesn't quite like what he's seeing in terms of Mkhitaryan's reactions.
It's reminiscent to Shinji Kagawa, isn't it, really, when he arrived from Borussia Dortmund and he was marginalised quickly under Louis van Gaal, and it reminds me of that.
It's actually becoming a pattern at United that, because there's been so many transfers over the last 3 years and transfers made by different managers, we're seeing big players out of the picture. That happened under Van Gaal, and it ended up happening under David Moyes. You know, someone like Nani under David Moyes, who got a new contract but wasn't actually really wanted by Moyes. Him and Hernandez ended up sort of out of the picture. So it's becoming a bit of a pattern for United, and I think that happens when there hasn't been any continuity in your transfer policy.
Do you expect Mourinho to get it right eventually?
My jury would be out on that. The Chelsea game really raised huge doubts for me. It was as bad as United have played, I think, since Sir Alex Ferguson left. What worried me was the lack of impact Mourinho seemed to be having on the team, because I contrasted it with Conte at Chelsea. I think they took over in fairly similar situations. Big club, coming off the end of a disappointing season, maybe something that needed refreshed. And both started the season trying to play the players from last season, and it wasn't working. Conte took brutal action, changed his formation, left out John Terry, gone with a team and made it work, something quite radical. And Mourinho didn't seem to be doing anything, doesn't seem to be doing much. And I know they won against Manchester City, but let's see them in a Premier League game against a full-strength side before thinking that this is the way forward. I do wonder about it, because I'm not yet seeing any huge impact being made by Mourinho.
Let's talk about the televised matches in the Premier League this weekend then. And we start at the Stadium of Light on Saturday lunchtime. This is Sunderland versus Arsenal. Sunderland, huge outsiders here in the betting, Jonathan, 13-2. The draw 15-4 with Arsenal 2-5. A couple of enhanced odds offers as well. Jermaine Defoe to score and Sunderland to win was 10-1, now 14-1. Theo Walcott to score and Arsenal to win was 13-10, now 6-4. Every single season, Jonathan, Sunderland seemed to perform the great escape. But this could be the greatest of them all, because only picked up 2 points from 9 games. And they don't look to be making any real progress under David Moyes, and they're still heavily reliant on Jermaine Defoe to score the goals. And I think if Sunderland escape this time, it will be incredible, really, because they look doomed at this point.
They do. I kind of say that with a heavy heart, because I'm a big fan of David Moyes, and I think he's found himself in a really difficult position. But you don't keep getting away with it as a club, and we saw that happen to Aston Villa last year, that eventually the Premier League's quality will catch up with you and you will go down. It doesn't matter who you are. And I wonder if Sunderland will find this as a season where a policy that we've had over 5 or 6 years of really underinvestment in the squad will catch up with them. You're right to say that Jermaine Defoe is their only real guaranteed sort of striker source of goals. You can see Moyes trying to find the blend in his team, but really without many options. So he's actually gone back to someone like John O'Shea, who I think excellent player in his day, but there were sort of questions about his legs and his age at the start of the season, but he's had to go back to him. I think in this particular game, there would be three things that would give Sunderland a sliver of hope. One would be that Moyes has actually got a good record against Arsenal. He has pulled off victories against Arsenal in similar situations when he was at Everton. He can construct a team to frustrate a possession side and then nick something, and he actually almost did that to Man City at the start of the season. The other would be Jermaine Defoe, who in these games can come to the fore, and the other would be just the support is obviously still with them. 1,500 fans went down to Southampton in the League Cup, incredible. And while they've got that, they do have something. But it's no surprise that Arsenal are overwhelming favourites, because on form, on quality, on nearly everything, they would have to be ahead. And I know they didn't win at the weekend, but it wasn't a bad performance either. And the defending, which has been their question mark, was still decent in that game. Hard to see any other result, really. But it's not without hope for Sunderland.
Arsenal haven't lost away from home this season. That was a disappointing result, though, wasn't it, against Middlesbrough? Because I think everyone envisaged a comfortable Arsenal win, the way they have cranked through the gears this season, and they've looked good going forward. And I think with Alexis Sanchez coming in that number 9 role, almost in a similar way to Liverpool have constructed their side this season, it's worked. And I know Olivier Giroud, who has been a fantastic servant for Arsenal, a lot of their fans have thought he's not quite good enough. And Sanchez coming into his role has worked for the Gunners this season.
It very much so. And, you know, with it's also given Walcott a lease of life. It's made their attack very much focused on speed and getting behind the defensive line. I think Giroud maybe slowed it down for them a little bit. I thought that actually against Middlesbrough, that you saw that they missed both Cazorla and Xhaka in midfield. You know, maybe that distorted the picture a little bit. They went in with Elneny and Coquelin, which, you know, solid players, but very little creativity there. And when you've got Walcott, Ozil, Iwobi, Sanchez, you know, they do need fed, and they need those balls played up from quickly. So maybe there was just a little bit of a lack of craft in midfield that affected them. But as I said, the fundamentals for Arsenal have been defending and getting that spine right, and actually this is they look a lot better this season. The quality centre half partnership, Sanchez through the middle, as you say, and when Xhaka is playing, then they've also got, you know, a proper dynamic sort of modern midfielder as well. So a lot better.
What's the prediction then for Sunderland Arsenal?
Well, I'd have to say it'll be an Arsenal win. If you'd be looking for a score, I'd say, you know, they'll win probably by a couple of goals. Mm. There's just, as I say, there's just that one little question mark. Sunderland are capable, if everything goes right, of winning that game. I wouldn't bet on it, but they are capable.
Arsenal to win 2-0 is in the betting at 7-1. If you do think Arsenal are going to win by two clear goals, Arsenal -1 on the handicap is at 19-20. On to Saturday, tea time, 5:30 kickoff at Selhurst Park. Crystal Palace taking on Liverpool. And Palace are 19-5 to win the match. The draw 14-5 with Liverpool 7-10. Enhanced odds offers, Benteke to score and Crystal Palace to win was 6-1. It's now 8-1. And Roberto Firmino to score and Liverpool to win was 9-5 and now 5-2. Every time this fixture comes up, Jonathan, I reminisce on a couple of years ago when Liverpool had the Premier League crown in their grasp with 11 minutes to go, 3-0 up at Selhurst Park, and it all came crashing down in those last 11 minutes, and they ended up only picking up a point. And it's just one of those fixtures which I think Liverpool fans will dread.
Well, that game you talk about still sort of talked about by football writers because it was the ultimate example of having to rip up your match report with about 10 minutes to go and write a completely different story. I think the guys, I wasn't working that night. I think it was a Monday night, but the guys that were said it was the biggest ordeal they've ever faced. There's been some terrific games between Palace and Liverpool at Selhurst Park. Palace have got this historically good record against Liverpool. I think they beat them 3-1, was it last season or something? Mm. Maybe the season before in this game. Alan Pardew's got a history with Liverpool, you know, that goes back to the cup final that they snatched from him through Steven Gerrard in 2006. There's a Benteke factor. And then, you know, there's just that indefinable thing that sometimes there's a bogey team, and Palace away seem to be, you know, pretty much Liverpool's bogey fixture. So it's fascinating because Liverpool come into this, they couldn't be in better form. Team's working brilliantly. The B team played in midweek, and actually, you know, Sturridge and Origi, who can't get into the side, were sensational together. So much is going right for Liverpool, but they're now coming up against the bogey side. And if they are to win the league or come close, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but these are the games that they have to win. These are the fixtures. They've let themselves down in these fixtures over, you know, 4 or 5 years, and this will be a pretty telling test, I think, for Klopp's side.
It will be. They are odds on 7-10 to win the match. And you mentioned Christian Benteke there. He is 19-10 to score any time. I think he'd like nothing more than to inflict pain on Liverpool here, because his spell at Liverpool ended ignominiously. What's your prediction for this game then, Crystal Palace versus Liverpool?
Well, actually, I will go with Liverpool. Mm. I think this is the time they'll break their hoodoo. They're just in such good fettle at the moment, and I think they'll score early and get another one towards the end. So I'd go for 2-0 Liverpool.
A Liverpool to win 2-0, 15-2. It must be it must be quite a lot of fun reporting on Jurgen Klopp matches because he's entertaining, isn't he?
Oh yeah, I mean he uses charisma. He's one of those that when he smiles, you smile with him, and he's passionate. It's a great season for that. Conte's the same, you know. Yeah. Guardiola brings intensity on the pit, on the sidelines, and Pochettino's the same. I think there's a real excitement, and Klopp's right at the front of it, and he just, you know, he represents everything I want in a manager. You know, he's trying to develop youth at the same time. He's all about his team play rather than stars, energy, enjoyment, and freshness. So it's great. It's great watching him and Liverpool at the moment.
You mentioned those managers there, but left out Jose Mourinho because it seems like he's changed, doesn't it?
It does. He used to exude all those things that we're talking about, and at the moment he's not. And I think he's only something like 6 months older than Klopp, but they actually seem of a slightly different generation. Maybe we're just used to him, but, some of my colleagues have been writing about it, and I think they're right, that there does seem to be an essential spark missing from Jose at the moment. Maybe all he needs is a winning team to get it back, but we'll see.
Everton versus West Ham is next. This is a Sunday game, 1:30 kickoff. Everton 4-5 to win it. The draw is 11-4 with West Ham 16-5. The enhanced odds, Yannick Bolasie to score and Everton to win was 5-2. And that's been enhanced to 3-1. And Dimitri Payet to score and West Ham to win was 7-1, now 9-1. When West Ham went to Goodison back in March and won, it broke a string of 15 consecutive Premier League games without a win against Everton. They came from 2 down to win 3-2 on that occasion. And Everton are struggling slightly now, and Slaven Bilic, I think, will be optimistic that his team can go back to his former club and pick up a result in this game.
He will, and beating Chelsea in the League Cup gives a real sort of momentum to them as well. I was surprised, actually. Everton's little slump, I must admit, went under my radar, and I was surprised to sort of look at it and think, they haven't won in 5 games or something like that. Because I still had in my mind this sort of great start the season they made under Koeman, and how he's got things right for them. It's a different Everton than the one that West Ham beat last year. You know, that I think that Everton under Roberto Martinez was ripe for a kind of counter-attacking, powerful, set-piece orientated game that Slaven Bilic plays. You've got a much tougher Everton side now, and I think it will be more difficult for West Ham to do a job on them. And I don't think they've lost at home under, not in the Premier League anyway, under Koeman. So a bit of a struggle this game maybe for both sides. But actually, I think Everton might come back to form them in this.
And if you're looking for goal scorers, Romelu Lukaku has to be your man. He's scored against West Ham in their last 6 league meetings, and he is powerful. And when he's on song, Lukaku, and he seems to have formed that partnership with Yannick Bolasie as well in the early part of the season, which is working out well.
Absolutely. I can see if you're a striker how great it would be playing with Bolasie, because he goes down the sides. He's got a trick in him. He moves defences out of position, and then he can put in a final ball. As you say, the pair of them have connected very well on the pitch, and it's actually made Ross Barkley's kind of struggling season, it's kind of sidelined that issue, I suppose, because this Bolasie Lukaku connection has worked so well. The other Everton player that I can't take my eyes off really is Gana or Guy.
Yes,
he's just had such dynamism, and he's shown an aspect of his game I wasn't sure that he had, which was, you know, coming up and joining attacks, not just being the sort of defensive midfielder. So they've got some good players in that attacking structure now, and at the same time strengthening the defence. I think they're a more balanced team than last year.
I think he surprised a lot of people, Jonathan, because he came from Aston Villa and they were so poor last season.
Yeah, I mean, one of those, I think we looked at that Villa team and didn't really see any hope, and maybe didn't look closely enough. And it's a clever signing because statistically he was second only to Kante in terms of interceptions and tackles. And he's not only brought that, as I say, but actually a bit of quality that maybe that's the aspect I hadn't really seen at Villa, you know, that quality, that ability to play a little bit as well and join attacks that I suppose Villa didn't really have any attacks last year, so that was a problem.
It's true. Southampton versus Chelsea is the later game on Sunday, 4 p.m. kickoff. Southampton 21-10 to win this match, the draw 23-10, and at Chelsea 13-10. The enhanced odds, Charlie Austin to score and Southampton to win, was 4-1, now 6-1, and Diego Costa to score and Chelsea to win was 12-5, that's now 3-1. I've asked this question to numerous journalists on this podcast this season, Jonathan. How does Southampton keep doing it? Because every single year I think they're selling players again and it's bound to catch up with them eventually. But Claude Puel has come in, they've sold loads of their stars, brought a new crop through, and they are being successful again in the Premier League.
Yeah, and I mean, the other element is, you know, Swansea did this a while ago when they kept losing managers and players and did well. But what Swansea had was a set style of play that you know, they just brought coaches to fit that. And I mean, they have moved away from that now, but that worked well for them. But Southampton don't even really have the continuity of style of play. I mean, you know, Koeman and Claude Puel are quite different managers, and Pochettino was a different manager before them, and it's really impressive. It's a continuity born of the actual club's philosophy, really, rather than anything on the pitch. I don't know, I've really seen it before, but what they obviously do is that they scout very well, they sign cleverly, and they also look for managers, coaches quite cleverly. They, you know, Les Reed's got to take credit as director of football there. When a manager goes, they've tended to have another very good one to bring in, and they're now at the stage where, and I know this from speaking to coaches, coaches now look at Southampton and think, oh, I'd love to work there, because they can see that there's this continuity. They can see that it's a club with proper support, good academy, good structure. And, you know, nice place to play, nice place to live, decent squad. So actually they're now becoming an attraction. And Claude Puel, who wanted to get into English football for some time, you know, he's had some big jobs in France, was only too happy to come and do it like Koeman was before him. So I think Southampton are a bit of a model that other similar clubs could look at, to be honest.
They're up against Chelsea here, Jonathan, and Antonio Conte has found the key ingredient now, hasn't he? He's been looking for those three centre-backs and he's got that now.
Well, I mean, I went to both their 3-0 win over Leicester and their 4-0 win over Manchester United and came away enormously impressed with the team. The back three with those personnel works brilliantly because, you know, David Luiz is kind of released from having to, I guess, defend all the time. You know, he can defend, but his attention wanders. He's got that scope as a free man. And they've got, you know, quick wing backs, you know, lovely balance there. Alonso's a specialist in the position. Moses is more an attacker, but he's really enjoying the scope. And what struck me is not just, you know, it's not just been the change of formation, but I think that has really helped players, but it's the overall intensity that the team's producing that was so lacking last year by the very same players, by the likes of Hazard and Costa. That's really come to the fore under Conte's management. And then on top of all of that, Kante's just a magnificent footballer, a magnificent signing for them. And he's having such an effect on the team through everything he does on the pitch, his energy and all the functions that he can do. So now that they've got the formation right, I think they really are going to be a proper force this year.
I can see this being a defensive battle because we talked about Chelsea's back line, but Southampton, Virgil van Dijk just gets better and better. He's a superb player, isn't he, Virgil van Dijk?
Van Dijk's terrific, really good. Sometimes when, you know, I knew about him from friends in Scotland, and sometimes it's difficult to assess because you're not tested in anything like the same way in SPFL than you are in the Premier League. But you know, his transition's been seamless. He's very good in both boxes, actually, as is Jose Font. I'm a big fan of him.
Yeah.
Underrated in the Premier League for years, they've also got, you know, they've got a couple of decent defensive midfielders and a good goalkeeper.
This is a tough match to predict.
It,
I think
it is. I mean, I would go for the draw. I think it's two sides bang in form, who defend well, as you say. I'd go for the draw, and I wouldn't even be surprised at 0-0.
23-10 the draw. If you're looking at the 0-0 draw, that's a big price, 10-1 for that game to finish goalless on Sunday afternoon. And we do have Monday night football this week as well, and we're at the Britannia for Stoke versus Swansea. Stoke even money, the draw 12-5, Swansea 11-4. The enhanced odds offers Wilfred Bonny to score and Stoke to win was 23-10, now 3-1, and Gylfi Sigurdsson to score and Swansea to win was 11-2. Now 7-1. I can see Wilfred Bonny scoring in this game against his former club, Jonathan.
I'm not sure about that, the way he's been playing. I'm not sure I'd put any money on him to even be on the pitch. I don't know. A bit unfair. He's been a disappointment. But Stoke have actually found what was lacking. And it's funny, they started last season quite slowly as well, didn't they? And then they came to the fore. In fairness, in both cases, Mark Hughes has tried to improve the squad and started the season with new players, and it's taken a little bit of time to settle down. But that, I guess, taking that point at Old Trafford has really given them a push. Two important wins, albeit arguably against the two weakest sides in the league. And then, of course, they've got the other member of the bottom three in this Monday night game, and Bob Bradley as a new coach will face that old, not Tuesday night, but Monday night, called Monday night at the Britannia. So it's testing for him.
Were you surprised by the appointment of Bob Bradley?
No, I wasn't actually. He is a coach who has been, I guess, trying to get an English job for a while. Obviously, he's an English speaker. I think he's got an interesting CV. I remember him doing very well with the US, doing a job on England at that World Cup. Done quite well in Norway, been willing to work in different corners of the world to try and further his career. And of course, Swansea have got semi-American ownership. They say that's not why they hired an American coach, and I'm sure that's right. But it may have well been a factor that, you know, they'd have known more about Bob Bradley than maybe some other owners. So no, and Swansea also tend to go a little bit outside the box for their appointments. I mean, nobody called Francesco Guidland, for example. And I did say when Ryan Giggs was being touted for the Swansea job, I actually did think, no, they won't go for something as obvious as that, because that's not really how Swansea do it.
This match then, Stoke versus Swansea, not maybe the most attractive of Monday night fixtures, but it'll be a big betting heat for William Hill on Monday night. What do you think's going to happen?
Well, look, I mean, if Shaqiri plays as he played in the whole game, then it will be an attractive match. I mean, on song, he and a few of those Stoke players are really worth watching. I think they are in form and they'll be too strong for Swansea. The game will come too early for Bob Bradley, I can't really see anything other than a Stoke win.
Even money for Stoke to win. If you do think Jerdan Shaqiri is going to score again, that's in the betting at 19-10 for him to get on the score sheet. Jonathan, thank you for your company.
Great, Dave. No, enjoyed that.
If you want to follow Jonathan on Twitter, at JNorthcroft is Jonathan's Twitter handle. You can follow myself at DKellner. Make sure you check out all William Hill's podcasts at audioboom.com, and we'll have more action in the Premier League next weekend, and we'll be back with the FWA podcast next Friday. Thank you for your company, folks, and make sure you keep on listening here at William Hill.
Get a £5 free bet every week with Offer Club from William Hill.
Hey, oh, let's go, let's go.
Simply stake a total of £20 or more across the week. on pre-match football accumulators with four or more selections, and you'll get a £5 free bet on the Friday. Plus, you can get on faster and easier than ever with our new and improved mobile betting experience. Join William Hill Offer Club on mobile or online now. When the fun stops, stop.